You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges, and follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
Thank you very much for being here. Welcome back. Good afternoon again. For those who've just walked in, I'm Shada Islam. I'm Director of Policy at Friends of Europe. This is a conversation about China's cities today and tomorrow. It's about smart cities, or as a Dutch friend of mine just told me, how to be smart about cities. I'm just going to say a few pointers that I think everybody really knows, but just to remind us and put it back on the agenda. I think what's happening in China's urbanization is really unprecedented in history. Urbanization is a phenomenon across the world, but the pace and the scale of what's happening in China is really quite remarkable. Second point, China's urbanization has actually gone hand in hand with the economic boom that we've seen since the last three decades. Just some other figures. In 1950, 13% of people in China lived in cities. By 2010, it was 45%, and it's projected to reach 60% by 2030. And of course, 25 of the world's largest 100 cities are in China. Now, China is also very high up on the Chinese government agenda. Urbanization is very high up on the Chinese government agenda. It's part of the 13th five-year plan, and we will be talking about it. Now, to discuss these issues with me is my friend, Mr. Li Qie. He's Director General of China Center for Urban Development of the NDRC. He is, if I may say so, Mr. Li Qie, Mr. Urbanization when it comes to China. You have been a regular participant of our dialogue on urbanization within the China-Europe Forum, and I think you've been here for three times already. So it's a real pleasure to have you here and to ask you some very basic questions about China's cities. Last year, Premier Li Keqiang talked about a new type of urbanization in China. And I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of the flavor of what this means, what is the path, and what are the challenges that you face?
谢谢.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure to be here today. It's my third visit to Europe-China Forum. Last two times, I believe it was in the library. This time, we have such a grand venue. So it's my pleasure to be here today. Yesterday, during the China-EU summit, Premier Li Keqiang was in present and gave a speech. He actually mentioned that in the future, we can see more urbanization planning in China in the future. As host just mentioned, that we have new and we have old. So where are the new and where are the old? I think you have to have a basic understanding about the history of China. From the 79, so we can see the urbanization has been increased to more than half, 55.7%. So the urbanization has increased by 1% at least. So from 2000 to 2004, we have increased 1.4% in terms of urbanization. And every year, we have 70 million people migrating to cities. So all this has explained that currently, we have 0.75 billion people are currently living in cities. So that if we convert the figure, it would be amazing. We are converting to amazing figure in Europe and Japan. So every year we can see all those 70 million people migrating to cities. Of course, there will be problems caused. So when we talk about new urbanization, okay, that's mentioned, 0.75 billion people, they are all only on statistics. But for people who actually really reside in the city and can receive local welfare, I think it's only 0.49, 0.5 billion. So all these migrant settlers, or we can say they are migrant workers, they do not, well, just like in Europe, they do not to have resident permit as a huge gap between people people who obtain resident permit and people who become citizens. So for those people who are migrating to the big cities and working there, they cannot receive any benefits in those cities. So those are the old traditions and old customs we wish to see a breakthrough. So for most of the cities that have a lot of high employment rate, it can attract a lot of migrant workers. So for a lot of those people, where they were from, those rural countrysides, rural cities or towns, actually one day when they return to those rural places, there are not enough infrastructures being put in. They cannot retire in those places because they are relatively less developed. So I think to compare with the migrating rate in Europe, I think how many of the cities in Europe actually have more than 10 million residents? I think maybe six of them. Okay. In China, we have at least six cities that we have more than 10 million residents. So we don't see any of them in Europe. So for all these cities and all those urban development, as you can see that China has undergoing rapid development and there are huge problems followed. So we are actually pursuing just rapid economic growth. A lot of resources being wasted at the same time, including land, because we're just working on a lot of construction sites, building more and more houses. Actually, below the surface, infrastructures are still we still lack of those kind of infrastructures. So for all those underground pipes that we do not have sufficient sewage. So a lot of places, I can say they're like ghost towns. So we only care about the surface, the appearance, but what's the real important things within, we have not focused on. Therefore, for all those problems, for the 18th CPC, National Assembly, all those questions have been raised. First is we have to return to people. So we have to solve problems of our migrant workers. Second, we have to focus on sustainability, sustainable development, and mainly focus on green energy and smart cities. Thank you.
I was just wondering, Mr. Ricci, you've sort of very honestly told us about the big problems, and of course anyone visiting China sees the challenges that the government faces in tackling them. I was wondering to what extent the process has actually begun. We heard in the third plenum, of course, certain measures were taken on the residence issues. What else is in the pipeline in the 13th five-year plan, if you like, in the pipeline to tackle these enormous challenges of managing billions, China's urban billion, as we call them?
We've noticed that after the government raised this 12 five-year plan, they've taken urban planning into consideration, and we have the principles of urban development. And we have more and more in the second half of 2014, we have more action plans relating to urban development. So all this are trying to promote a human-centered development for our urban cities in the future. So I think it's not just a short-term development issue, it's a long-term problem that we have to face. So as it's been mentioned in all this 13 five-year plan, I think we have to focus on human people themselves in the future. So I think we have to view it beyond the 13 five-year plan, that we have to focus on the migrant workers, about their welfare, about enhance their living quality. Second, one day when they retired, will they be able to return to their hometown? Because I mentioned so many of those people actually left their hometown, moved to cities. And some of them actually still work within the same province. They didn't go far. So after they retire, it will be easier for them to settle and return back to their village or nearby cities. So how to make sure to help them settle later is important. The third is that our poverty problem within cities. So for those poverty populations, how can we help them change their lives, improve their living quality? I think start from housing. And there are poverty population on the outskirts of cities because all the infrastructures has been focused within the city. So for those outskirts, suburban area, they've been neglected for a long time. So for those people, those poor people who live in the outskirts area, we try to help them, include them into our urban planning. So when we set up this long-term plan for 10 years, 20 years, we have taken into consideration the population is increasing and the migrant workers, we will see the number increase as well. Second is how can we actually implement all the policies through reforms? As we all say that reform is very important, just not just about policy, but also land reform. One day, if we can achieve more land reforms, if we can get support from local governments and from provincial governments, and we can convert all the resources into helping local migrant workers and local poverty, and we can increase and enhance the standard of infrastructure locally. Because there's a huge difference between China and Europe, especially when you are managing a city. For all the city, the smallest town in China actually have 1 million population, so very different to the definition here in Europe. So how can we manage those small and medium-sized cities and make sure they have the same kind of development right to huge cities? Is very different, different to Europe. The story of Europe is completely different from the medieval time. A lot of cities there, they have autonomy, so they are actually in charge of themselves. So from China, how can we implement policy from the higher central government to the provincial government to the local government and help release more energies and try to boost development? That's important. Thank you.
You're right, of course, Mr. Li Qie. The historical development of cities is very different between Europe and China. And yet, we have launched an EU-China Sustainable Urbanization Partnership. And there was this forum yesterday that Premier Li Keqiang attended. And, of course, Friends of Europe has always been a very enthusiastic, active participant of this forum. So given the differences, where do you see the connections between these two patterns of urbanization? What can we learn from each other, especially what can China learn from Europe's efforts at sustainable urbanization?
If you're from an academic point of view, and when we look at the history in Europe, from the medieval time to now, I think the urbanization from medieval time till industrial revolution, you have come a long way. But from China's perspective, it's still lagging behind. This model doesn't and won't apply to situation in China because China is a more vibrant environment and we have more population and we have more huge cities. So what can we learn from Europe? I think first is how to enhance the governance of local government and how to enhance the standard. I think that's very important. As we all know that in the last 30 years, China has seen a rapid economic growth, but it's a very loosened kind of governance. So we can say it's a running water kind of a governance. That means it's very casual. A lot of times we would like to learn from Europe to learn about better governance. A lot of those local officials actually, they will be dispatched or allocated to other posts after a short term in those cities. So when they come to their post, they have their ideas about how to manage and govern the city. But one day when they've been relocated to another city, all those policies will not be continued by their successors. So I think when we learn from Europe, a lot of time we just learned what we see, what we observe from the appearance. So we didn't actually learn the real essence of the governance skill in Europe. I've come to Europe in the 90s. I lead a group of urban planners. A lot of people just saw big, beautiful mansions in Europe, and they thought, okay, maybe we should build all those kind of mansions in Shanghai, in Shenzhen, in China. So we have all those European-style villages in China. They actually build a lot of European-style buildings, but it's a different idea. Yes, they look European style, but you are very close to your neighbor. Within this land, you may have 30, 40 mansions. So it's a very different idea to the quality of living in Europe, and totally different concept. We were just being a copycat, but we didn't actually learn the essence. So I realized when we learn from the appearance, it's very shallow. You do not understand the real essence. So when I came here 25 years ago, yes, we admire the scenery and the flora and fauna in Europe. So we actually imported a lot of trees from Europe, try to create a Europe-like scenery in China. But we do not have the Mediterranean kind of climate. We do not have the temperate climate like in Middle and Northern Europe. In China, we have a lot of very dry land. We have a desert area. So if you want to make sure those European trees will survive, you have to water them very often. So a lot of cities, they actually spend a lot of money and budget on trying to creating a European style or European looking cities. But it's not very practical. Two-thirds of those trees died at the end. So this kind of learning, this kind of copying, I think is absolutely not working. But I think for a lot of Chinese officials, well, they do not have an insight on how to plan locally, so they just copy. So actually it caused a lot of waste of resources, and that's what we try to avoid in the future. So how can we learn the essence and the real spirit behind city governance in Europe? I think that's what we need to work on. Maybe we need to learn from some expert. We can conduct more urban planning training courses here in Europe. We will need more assistance. But I think fundamentally is how can we ensure our government will reform at the same time to come up with better policies to suit our urban plannings in the future. All those are crucial, and I think it will take a long time for all this come to effective. So during the Chinese development in the last 30 years, it's not just learning from other countries, it's also self-reflecting. So I think learning is important, how to manage a city, how to govern a city. But at the same time, we will input, we will invest more into infrastructure building in the city. And how can we realize a vision for this city? How can we make sure this city will be listed on the same level as our competitors around the world? We noticed that when we talk about learning from Europe, a lot of Chinese will mention that, oh, but we are talking about different scale of cities, very different. Yeah, but I'm sure the European patterns can be used in China, some of them, if they are suitable. But currently in China, we're talking about cross-field development, cross-domain or leaping domain development. So currently we have 1.36 billion population. So I think people who reside in cities are 0.9 billion. So a lot of them are not rich people. A lot of them are peasants, are farmers, migrated to cities. So I think it's similar in Europe from 18th century to 19th century. A lot of immigrants from urban rural area to the cities. But a lot of time those migrants were actually facing discriminations from locals in the cities. So how can we help those migrant workers integrate and enhance their living quality and at the same time help the rural villages become urbanized as well? I think that's the lesson we really need to learn and we really need to work on. So when we talk about learning from Europe, it's not just copying the development and the history of Europe, but we have to understand better everything behind and the culture, and we can actually walk our own way, our own path. So I think it's very important for our cooperation in the future, not just copying, but learning from your experience, and we can develop our own way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that's a very, very frank assessment of what I think everyone realizes is a massive challenge facing China. I'd like to open the floor to questions from yourself, because as I said, Mr. Li Xie has enormous experience in this, I would say, massive task that you perform. And of course, the urbanization partnership between the EU and China has been going on now for about 3 years. So while you gather your wits and start getting ready for questions, I will just pursue one more track that I find really interesting, Mr. Li Xie. It's the references that we made earlier today to smart cities, Wi-Fi cities. This is also something that was discussed yesterday at the business summit. Everybody seems to be excited. You said we're not going to copy, but I think in the future we may be copying you as you go into new uncharted territory.
Talking about smart cities, actually in 2012, Premier Li Keqiang already mentioned that it's a trend and it was actually a combination of technology and progress between China and Europe. But 3 years has passed by. I think we've seen a lot of prosperity and development in Europe and China at the same time. So this kind of a high technology has changed greatly in not just Europe, but also in China. So we actually have 0.65 billion people who have access to internet in China. So internet users actually accounts for the total population in Europe, actually equal to total population in Europe. So we have a total population 1.36 billion population, but among them 1.26 have mobile phone. So we are talking about huge amount of users. So we talk about Internet Plus, when we're talking about smart city, I think it's interesting and it's challenging. Yes, we do need this high advanced technology from Europe. How can we apply them in China? And in terms of application, I think we've surpassed U.S. in certain fields, I have to say. So I think smart city will be the next trend and the next best example of the application of all this advanced technology. Yes, yesterday we mentioned about smart cities, not in only in China, but also in Europe. So what is the definition of smart city? Do we just apply if the whole city have access to internet, you call it smart city? No, actually, through smart technology, not just internet technology and connection, we can solve problems and help boost our green technology, help lower carbon emission, and we will have more smart families, smart community, smart industry. It's an idea of combination of the usage and application of the internet to make the city a true smart city. So we have a story. Actually, we say the fleas actually come from pigs. Why? Usually fleas come from lamps, right? So usually we say fleas came from lamps or sheep. But why fleas come from pigs? Because for internet users, a lot of time the income you generated, they are minus income. So how can they make money? A lot of time it comes from advertisement. So advertising actually generate great revenue behind internet industry. So this has become a huge and heat debate in China. Traditionally, how we judge whether an enterprise or company is making money is profiting, but now it's a new internet era. During my researches, we try to exclude the profit mechanism. We are talking about the clicking frequencies. The more your webpage get clicked, get viewed, that means you have a platform that will be able to provide more services, will be able to attract more advertisement. When we talk about Uber, the kind of taxi system, as you know, actually, you have to find a balance because we heard a lot of negative things about them. So we see a huge freedom here in Europe, in France, in Germany, in all these countries. If you're not happy, you can go on strike. If you're not happy with the Uber car, you see people set fire on them. So it's a huge freedom you've been enjoyed. That's what we could not imagine in China. But for us, how can we realize this dream of smart city through Internet Plus? So when we talk about smart city, we have to talk about the real estate. It hasn't reached a saturated market yet, so we actually have a huge potential in terms of a real estate market. So we have this 4.0 planning model. So I think under this framework, we can absolutely see the implement of smart cities in China and in Europe in the future. Thank you.
Anyone? I'm giving you guys a chance to ask a question.
Okay. Well, my name is Arjan Harbers. I'm a researcher in urban planning from the Netherlands. I've been in one of the eco-cities in China, Shenzhen, China-Singapore eco-city. And I was impressed by the sustainability of this city. There was a high density, there was a mixture of functions, there was public transport, electric buses. But what was lacking, in my opinion, was livability. You could see that all the houses were in big scale, only one type of housing, high-rise buildings, nine times repeated, big repetition of buildings. So I'm afraid China is making the same mistakes that were made in Western Europe 60 years ago after the Second World War with the banlieues and the deprived neighborhoods. So that's a big concern from a Western point of view towards China.
Regarding this viewpoint, I have a different point of view. Of course, we hope to see China in the future will be able to preserve ancient cities and ancient towns. But this kind of style, actually, they were built by timbers, so they would not last, actually. A lot of them been destroyed during fires. But please note that we have 1.36 billion population. If we want to have a housing standard like in Europe, I think it's not very achievable. I actually paid a visit to Korea and in Japan. I've been to Nagoya and Kyoto. For all those, basically, Korea doesn't have a long history. A lot of the old buildings have been destroyed in Korea. I can only see skyscrapers. So what can we do in the future? Yes. We would like to preserve all those ancient sites and old buildings if they are still in good structure. And in the last 3 years of rapid urban development, yes, I think we have to see a more strict policy being enforced, a regulation being enforced to help preserve those kind of old buildings. Otherwise, we won't even be able to preserve those visual beauties. Let me give an example. Yes, the government has invested a lot into new towns and building new cities. If we have this new town, let's say it's 350 square meters, and the local government want to develop completely, and you have to have a road being planned as well. So a lot of time, we can't find a balance of practicality and the beauty and pleasant to the eyes. How can you take care of these two at the same time? When we go visit Europe, a lot of time we think, oh, this city, this town is beautiful. And they have a very good road planning as well. But in China, a lot of time when we try to develop, we just develop the whole area. Actually, sometimes they even have an outer wall to limit the city within. So it's not nice, actually, and the road planning is not complete. And a lot of time, within the city, within the wall, you see a lot of traffic jams. So when you study about the urban planning in China, we do have a lot of problems, or a lot of things we are lacking of. So a lot of those urban planners in those cities in China, they do not have enough expertise. So like I mentioned, a lot of time we only focus on the very superficial surface modernization. But at the same time, we have to really come to realization, what do Chinese people really need when we talk about urban planning? We see a lot of skyscrapers in other countries, and we think that means development. So is that what we need? Is that what we need in China? So currently in China, a lot of people think how to show your wealth is go everywhere with your car. But actually, I like coming to Europe, go to Rome, go to Paris. You can walk around the city, take the subway. It's great. I hope more and more Chinese people will adopt this kind of new concept. Doesn't use car to show off their wealth. But also, because we have such a huge population, how can we conserve the natural resources at the same time and allocate all the natural resources more reasonably and more efficiently? That's very important to us and to lower the living cost. Thank you.
Bit of a draft coming in. Just anyone wants to follow this up? Yes, yes. Wolfgang, please. Just put up your hand, Wolfgang. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang Papa. I'm working here with SEPS in Brussels now. We have seen in Europe with the regionalization, competence from the nation going into globalization upwards as well as downwards, downstream to the locals even. That means we have more and more proximity of decision making. That's the aim. Local level even. You mentioned autonomy already in the Middle Ages here in Europe. This is a long tradition. How far is China taking this as a learning model to learn from our mistakes as well and giving more autonomy to the local level? We have in Europe, for instance, the covenant of mayors, where they come together, big cities and even smaller ones now, in order to discuss issues of sustainability, green development, to learn from each other. Best practices are very open to the others now. Of course, the internet helps for communication. Is this as well a development, in China now, of decision-making coming down to the citizen in the local community? Thank you.
Whether Chinese officials have a lot of power or not, actually, on the local level, yes, they do, actually. And they can decide how they spend all the budgets being allocated from the central government, and they can spend all the money that's generated from the local city. So the local officials, actually, they has quite a big power. So that's a problem, yes. And what's the real problem lying behind is those officials do not understand what the local people's real need. And they have to respond to the central government. A lot of time, how they respond, this mechanism is not transparent. So a lot of time when central government sending an order, local government do not carry it out. The whole channel is not transparent. So all these problems have been existed in China for a long time. But recently, we've discovered that local officials, they are where the problems arise from, because they do not have a right understanding to urban planning and development. So I think we need to have a reform of the total Chinese official system, not just to have a reform of to replace them with more capable people. We have to have a new system to be able to allocate natural resources in a more efficient way. I think we probably have to see a more efficient financial system as well. With all these kind of mechanisms in being put into place, then we can see a better urban planning in the future. And I think with the market mechanism, actually, it's a good way with basically let the market decide where the natural resource will be allocated, will be used, and let the market decide how the urban planning will be conducted. All these problems has not been accumulated with the last day or two. It's been a long time. But I think especially for this channel from central government to local government, we need to see it having reform to become a more transparent channel. We've conducted a large-scale survey. We actually tried to survey on how can we solve all the problems and through reforms and development. Thank you.
There's a lady in front here. Could you just put up your hand, please? You have a question. That's the last question. Oh, now I see three hands going up. Guys, a bit of discipline. So I'll take the three questions together, Mr. Li Xie. I'll take three questions together because we do have lunch waiting for us. Please.
Okay. 我用中文讲, 在去年11月参加...
I'll ask in English. I participated in the APEC meeting in last November. President Xi mentioned that in the next 10 years for the Chinese development is that we want to have a better future, better society, enable Chinese people to have a higher living standard. Currently, when we talk about urban planning, there are several problems, yes, we face nowadays. So I would like to ask you, first, it's transportation, traffic problems. Second is exhaustion pipes and where can we deal with the wastewater? Third is about recycling and deal with wastage, about rubbish dump. So how, from your point of view, how did have you interact with experts in Europe? Because in terms of the three, waste treatment and wastewater treatment, actually Europe is in the leading position around the world. So I would like to hear from you, how will you help to enhance the living quality of Chinese people?
Take Jonathan first.
Thank you very much. Member of the Economic and Social Committee. This is not my area of expertise, but it seems to me that China has a choice. If you look at Europe and America, you see derelict inner cities and areas where, quite frankly, it's dangerous to go to at night. If you look at other parts of the world, you see huge urban sprawl, such as in Mexico, Brazil, Nigeria, and other countries. Do you think China's getting the balance right between those two threats?
Thank you, Jonathan. Very good question. The lady in green. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Many thanks, Dr. Tai, for your very frank words. I could be one of the founding members of the EU-China Economic and Social Committee and Council and Civil Roundtable. So I could meet your nation, and first of all, I would like to congratulate to you because their very strong belief, their common future. And I was invited by the Commission to the EU-China seminar during the Shanghai Expo in 2010 at the Healthy Cities. And I would like to come back to the health issue within the public services. And it is not mentioned, it hasn't mentioned by anyone. And I could be the rapporteur, solidarity in health and inequalities in healthcare in EU. And Edith, I could be the rapporteur of the migration and health issue in EU. My question is, are you planning to set up a center for public services to learn and teach each other, how can we help each other to organize, especially in cities, the public services and especially the health and social services. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for those questions. Mr. Li Xie, the floor is yours.
I think the interaction between China and Europe regarding urban development, I think it's very frequent. Actually, during the summit yesterday, we have three meetings. We talk about transportation, wastewater treatment, and also talk about smart cities. And there were a lot of parallel sessions yesterday morning. We talk about energy, we talk about transportation, and talk about smart city. Again, smart city is important, apparently. So, regarding to your concern, yes, we do have frequent interaction between China and Europe in terms of urban planning. But these are, hot potatoes. It's a very touchy issue because of the huge gap between China and Europe in terms of not just development, but also in terms of our concept and point of view. So a lot of the development that were not required by Chinese government, but actually being proposed by Chinese people, they actually voice out what they want. So for squares, okay, in China, we do have so many lovely squares or parks like you have in Europe, but not because we have aging population. So those aging population, elderly, they need a square, they need a park to go for exercise, to go for a walk. So those become more and more important when we talk about urban planning in China. And secondly, more and more the general public start to have a better understanding about urban planning. A lot of problems actually arise from waste treatment, about rubbish dump treatment. So all those treatment and all those waste management are very important. Most of the cities, how do they deal with their waste? How do they deal with their rubbish? They will not just put next to their cities. They will try to send them as far away as possible. But do we have those places? So I think we really need to work with the government. I keep saying we need to have more transparent policies. When we talk about wastewater, when you have a city that with a 10 million population, we have a huge amount of wastewater. Do we have the ability, do we have the capacity to treat those wastewater? When you talk about this, yes, we know it's important, but how can we solve this problem? Do you raise the price for water and you take wastewater treatment bill and you put them into the water bill to your local residents? How do you deal with this? So I think to have a better below surface infrastructure is very important. And this, yes, absolutely, we can learn a lot from Europe. Above the ground, I think, yes, we've done well so far, but below the ground, especially about waste treatment, we need to learn from Europe. Second, you mentioned about ghetto. Yes, I've been talking about the relationship between new and old in China. I've been telling you that we have a very different land system and the usage of land in China. So as we have this hukou system, it's about where you live, you have to register locally. So it's very different to Europe. So some people, yes, they might go to university in another city, they go to go for work in another city, but one day they return to their hometown and their hukou, where they register, their residence is still locally in their hometown. So I think some of the tradition is actually good. So we will try to preserve them. But for all those traditions, they no longer serve modern days. We have to discard them. And we can turn this into a long-term planning project. Currently, we have a resident permit. If you live in Shanghai, you will obtain a resident permit from Shanghai City. So I think in the future, we can see more housing. I think actually this will be a good experience. And we try to avoid all the negativity that we've seen or disadvantage we've seen when other countries and other cities been developed in the future. So hopefully we would like to see more farmers and peasants after they move to cities. For their children, they will be able to receive good education and they could have a brighter future. And in terms of health care, sorry, it's not my strength. It's not my field. So I think, yes, I agree, health care is very important. When we come up with a public policy, we have to take health care into consideration. I keep saying the population in China is 1.36 billion people. It's a huge country. So currently, we've seen already the social protection and other health care already is a huge bill for our government. So how can we try to promote health care reform? It will be a long-term project. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Li Xie. It's been, I think, a fascinating conversation touching on many facets of urbanization. And I will just point to a few of the gigantic tasks you've laid out for yourself. There's a whole issue of finances. Under the new normal, I guess, there will be a little bit of restriction in how much you can actually devote to sustainable urbanization. The question of governance that you've raised, I think, is a very valid and important one that all of us see. The chain of command challenge between the central and the local governments and the provincial governments, resident permits, natural resources, and your term of the under-the-ground infrastructure. So I wish you really well in your massive challenge ahead. I hope to see you here very, very often. Friends of Europe is very, very actively interested in urbanization as part of the dialogue we have with China. I'd like to thank you once again for being here and really for your frank and very, very open insight into where China is today, but also the vision for tomorrow. Thank you very much. Sorry, just an announcement. There is a networking lunch, and please be back for 2:15 so we can get into our final session, which is fascinating about One Belt, One Road.